Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church Weekly Sermon. We hope you enjoyed this message by Stephen Cady. For more information about this podcast or other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
When Sarah, a woman of advanced years, a woman who had spent her long life being shamed as barren, a woman who had watched her husband have a child with a slave girl, overheard that she was going to have a child in her old age from strange messengers, she laughed. Sarah laughed. It's why her son's name would be Isaac, a play on the Hebrew word for laughter. And while we who know this story have sort of come to expect laughter at this point, knowing as we do that Father Abraham would have many sons and many sons have Father Abraham, knowing that Sarah was destined to have a great nation come from her womb. In other words, although we expect laughter at this story because we know the story, ready to move on to Isaac being born so that we can get on to the next tale of family dysfunction that makes up so many of the founding myths of our faith, though we have come to expect laughter, the truth is it could have just as easily been tears. Sarah laughed, but she could have just as easily cried. Life is like that sometimes, isn't it? We come to those moments in which we hear something unexpected, something so different, so outside of our norm, so overwhelming that in our gut we don't quite know, for better or worse, even if it's what we always wanted, we just don't quite know whether to laugh or to cry or somewhere in between. Sometimes we do a little of both. Sometimes we need to do a little of both. Maybe it's come too late, or maybe it's come too early, or maybe the road it took to get there is so painful that by the time we finally do, we just don't know whether to laugh or to cry or something else entirely. Maybe some of us are there this morning, caught in between several feelings. Maybe most of us are there this morning. This is a holiday weekend, after all. Today is Father's Day, and we celebrate all those fathers among us. But while we kind of know what to do with Father's Day, we've had some experience with it, we also know that it's not the only holiday this weekend. And there's this other one, tomorrow, Juneteenth, that we don't quite know what to do with yet, do we? 2 years ago, Juneteenth, National Independence Day, became the first new federal holiday in our nation since Martin Luther King Jr. Day in 1983. Which means that tomorrow will technically be the third time that we as a nation celebrate this particular holiday, which is ostensibly about freedom from slavery. And while we are not the first to celebrate it, it has been celebrated in many black communities since 1866, spreading first from Texas to neighboring states and then moving north with the Great Migration. We don't fully understand it, do we? Sure, we know it's about freedom from slavery, or at least that day, June 19th, 1865, when that final pocket of enslaved persons finally heard the good news. Sure, we know that slavery wasn't officially done by law until the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which happened in December of 1865, that is, later that year. But the truth is, rather, just besides those broad brushstrokes, we don't really know a whole lot else about that holiday. Maybe I'm wrong. Could there be a more bittersweet holiday? One of more mixed emotions than a day which celebrates the end of slavery? And so, knowing that it's only our third time and we haven't yet had a chance to establish those patterns, we know what to do with Father's Day. We don't quite know what to do with Juneteenth. So long as it's not like a church, when you do something once, it's great. Twice, it's tradition. And third, you better not change it. Maybe before we get into it, we can at least try and set ourselves out on the right foot. So that instead of just using this federal holiday tomorrow as another opportunity to finish whatever tasks are still left on our to-do list, to plant whatever flowers need planting or work out in the yard, maybe, just maybe, by understanding what this holiday is about, we can understand something of what we are about. Because we don't really know much of the context or what happened after, or why we should care. But as disciples of Jesus Christ, as people who know somewhere deep still that the truth and only the truth will set us free, we know that we have to care. And that maybe, like Sarah in this moment, rather than running from those mixed feelings we have when we come to a day like today, we can embrace them, knowing that overcoming indifference is the first step on the journey of love. On June 19th, 1865, that is 2 full years after the Emancipation Proclamation and 2 full months after General Robert E. Lee surrendered at Appomattox, that is 2 full months after the Civil War officially came to an end, General Gordon Granger from Wayne County, New York, found his way with 2,000 Union soldiers to Galveston, the most populous city in Texas at the time, to announce in unequivocal terms that slavery was officially done. This, of course, had been true for the last couple of years since the Emancipation Proclamation. It's just that the enslaved persons there in Galveston and in that region didn't quite know it yet, or at least that's the story that we've been told. That's why we celebrate Juneteenth, isn't it? Though the real story is a little more complicated than that, as life often is. It's a little messier than we sometimes make it out to be. See, Galveston, being this populous city, the most populous in Texas at the time, it was a port city and one of the few places where the goods that were made in Texas, especially from the cotton mills, were sent out and other goods were received right through that wharf. And the predominance of workers on that wharf were, of course, enslaved persons, which makes it almost inconceivable that sometime during that previous 2 years, those workers loading things on ships, taking things off of ships, wouldn't have heard, at least at some point, the scuttlebutt of what was going on in the rest of the world. It's almost impossible to believe that they wouldn't have known something of what was happening out there in the world. And if we don't know for sure, we do know this, that at least 2 days prior to June 19th, 1865, that is on June 17th, 1865, there was said to be a huge roar of joy that came from the enslaved persons on the wharf. And when they were asked what they were celebrating, they all said, "We just found out that we're free," at which point they were beaten into submission. In other words, friends, they may have known that they were free. The news may have come. But without people who look like me, who were willing to enforce those laws. What difference did the law make? What difference did it make? Is it any wonder, then, that the reports from that day on June 19, 1865, said that the enslaved persons who heard the news didn't know whether to laugh or to cry? See, sometimes we forget that slavery was not just something that people argued against, it was something that people argued for. It was a choice. It was a calculus that happened in our nation, that in some ways continues to happen in our nation, in which the lives of those who have darker skin are weighed as less than the lives of those with lighter skins. We see that calculus still at play, that evil, racist, white supremacist calculus at play in everything from our justice system to our educational system to our healthcare system. It's alive and well today, but in Texas, at least, it began, just to offer a little context, really through one man, that is, of course, Stephen F. Austin, known as the father of Texas. See, Stephen F. Austin in 1825 had this dream. He had this dream that the eastern part of Texas, that fertile ground, could become a kind of haven for those who wanted to grow cotton in the similar way that they were growing in some of the other southern states at the time. Only Texas was still a part of Mexico. And the Mexican government, newly freed from Spain, didn't want anything to do with slavery. But Stephen F. Austin was persistent, if nothing else. And he began to rally people around him to try and advocate for exemptions. They worked and worked and spoke, and you know, greed in the end is a powerful motivator. And so in the end, they received that exemption, and human chattel were brought into Texas. They cleared the land and planted crops and survived torture and rape so that others could find sustenance. In 1836, when the Texans rebelled against the Mexican government and founded their short-lived nation of their own, they doubled down on their commitment to slavery and became known as a slaveholders' republic. When that fell, even though they had white settlers pouring in after that moment, when it finally fell about a decade later, the United States, there were those who argued they didn't want to take them in because Texas had already become known as a slaveholder society at the time, which makes sense of why, when the Civil War finally came to fruition, Texas joined the Confederacy with seeming no hesitation, and it explains why, even after the Civil War ended, they continued to fight on. That's the thing. The last battle of the Civil War, which took place on May 13, 1865, that is 1 month after the Civil War ended, happened in Texas, near Brownsville. And they won. The Confederates won the last battle of the Civil War, your classic case of winning the battle and losing the war. Now we, of course, parts of history, we would like to say that it's simply because they didn't know, they hadn't heard the news, they didn't quite know yet, except that part of the reason they won is because the Union soldiers were no longer there. It was an anemic group of forces that had already started to go back home because the war had ended. In other words, friends, this was not a case of obliviousness, this was a case of obstinance. They knew that the war was over, but they refused to believe. They understood that the slaves were free, but they refused to free them. After the battle, it became clear that they were not going to receive reinforcements from any other Confederate group of soldiers. And so soldiers in the Confederate army began to reluctantly desert, so much so that that Confederate general eventually on June 2nd, 1865, that is 2 full weeks before Juneteenth, went and surrendered to the U.S. Army office in Galveston, Texas. Only the Confederate soldiers didn't leave without a fight. Stories from those weeks leading up to that first Juneteenth have it that those former Confederate soldiers began to loot and to burn and to riot in the city. Which is most likely why General Granger sent his troops in. See, we love to believe that it was for the sake of those enslaved persons who were toiling away in enforced labor under the yoke and burden of oppression that they wanted to bring them out as quickly as possible. But the truth is, it was once the city began to burn, once the looting had begun, that's when they stepped in to protect their property. And the order, General Order Number 3, was secondary. It's no wonder why those enslaved persons had mixed feelings when it finally came down. Just look at the order itself. See, we, as we gather today, and especially tomorrow, to celebrate Juneteenth, we look at the first part of the order that in unequivocal terms freed the enslaved persons in that area, one that borrowed beautifully from the Declaration of Independence and even made it clear that now there was equality, some kind of equality between former enslaved persons and former slave owners, that there was equality. But the second part is what made it so complicated. The second part is what gave so many mixed feelings and mixed messages in that moment, because though it told the enslaved persons in the first part that they were free, it also told them to stay put. To trust that their former masters would begin giving them wages, and warned them that idleness would not be tolerated. Do you hear? There was no 40 acres and a mule, no promise for some kind of life, no help to take that first step towards new life. It was just, you're free, good luck, stay put. Even 2 months later, when the Freedmen's Bureau came in under the capable leadership of General Howard, who would go on to form Howard University, they didn't have enough people or enough resources to be able to provide the enforcement necessary to make it possible, which meant that any enslaved person who had the courage to step off the plantation was soon brought down by unspeakable acts of violence. And whatever momentary glimpse of racial equality was possible in that General Order Number 3 was quickly quelled by the hegemony of white supremacy. And while we, sitting here in our pews, watching on the live stream, listening on the radio, want to hold this at arm's length, to dismiss this as a problem of the deep past or the deep South, the truth is that trail of tears that had come from the laughter that was possible, that trail of tears leads right to our front door. It's enough to leave us with some mixed feelings, doesn't it? After all, we who at least sit here in Rochester, New York, know that in Monroe County, the county in which we sit, the county in which I preach, the county in which so many of us live, this county is more segregated by socioeconomic class and race than any other county in our country. Monroe County is more segregated by socioeconomic class and race than any other county in our country, despite the fact that we were the capital of abolition. In those years after the Civil War, the seed of white supremacy was planted, and it has borne unholy fruit. Now the question is, friends, where do we go from here? Look, tomorrow is Juneteenth, and we can use it as just an opportunity to have a day to relax, to sleep in a little bit and not worry. But what if before we establish those patterns, what if we, before we make the tradition that we stick with for the rest of our time, what if instead on this third time we as a nation celebrate all together Juneteenth, we used it as an opportunity to look around and ask ourselves, are we where we long to be? And if not, to commit to taking that next step towards it. Because like Sarah and Abraham, like those enslaved persons who finally heard the good news on Juneteenth, we are not yet at the promised land. And while we don't know whether when we get there we will be laughing or crying, the truth is we can't know until we try. And make no mistake, friends, there is an entire world out there who is longing for us, begging for us, waiting for us to try. May we not leave them behind. Friends, Elie Wiesel said, the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. It's okay to feel however you feel, because it's the first step towards love. May it be so. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, live fully, serve all, repeat.